You are now listening to the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. For more information, visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres, right? Yeah. Baseball's starting soon, so there's a reason to be optimistic, Nick.
Yeah, they are.
Baseball.
They are a team that competes against
other baseball teams.
But the division looks a little tough now with everything that happened yesterday. You know, it's been tough for a long time. It might have just gotten tougher.
Yes. The big news came down that Mookie is headed to the Dodgers, and not for all that much. So I'm excited about our guest today because we're going to get it explained to us, hopefully in a way that we can understand.
Well, we are joined by AJ Cassavell from MajorLeague.com, MLB.com. How should we be processing this, AJ?
Well, I think it's definitely fair to feel the sting and the disappointment, because there's sting and disappointment within the Padres organization.
Right.
That's real. That's not.
Yes.
You guys are feeling this. So are the Padres a little bit. But that being said, I think you got to process it in the way that the Padres probably could have gone out and gotten Mookie Betts if they wanted to. They could have upped the prospect offer, or they could have maybe changed some things around in terms of what they were doing. I think like the part of the reason this stings is because of the monetary aspect of where the contracts have come from in the past, but I think there's the reason to be optimistic is that they didn't maybe push the envelope and go too hard for Mookie Betts prospect wise, and they weren't willing to give up certain guys. And if the Dodgers, no one with the Padres wants the Dodgers to win the World Series this year. But if we're at this point next season and the Dodgers haven't won the World Series, and the Padres progress as I think we probably think they'll progress this year, well, what would have been all that different?
Yes. You know?
Yeah, I mean, just as a not having a rooting interest in it, I mean, have you in your career covering baseball, have you seen a lineup this potent put together before? I mean, it's got to be up there, just on the outside looking. I mean, going into spring training,
right? I would think maybe those Astros teams, but then how much were they doing that on their own? But this Dodgers team is loaded in the sense that they probably have. I mean, I think Cody Bellinger is really good. They might have the second and third best players in baseball.
Exactly.
In their outfield now, and
if Corey Seager has a resurgence, which could easily happen.
The thing that's always like that you notice every time you go to Dodger Stadium or the Dodgers come down to San Diego is kind of how relentless they are. Like the bottom of that lineup right now is Seager's going to bat sixth, and Gavin Lux might be eighth, and it's just that's where it gets tough to deal with. But like I said, from the Padres' perspective, I don't know that adding Mookie Betts. If you add Mookie Betts, the Padres are not better than the Dodgers, and they're probably not within 5 or 10 wins of the Dodgers. Just from my estimation. Now they might be pushing for that wild card spot, which would be huge. But 2020, even with Mookie Betts, probably wouldn't have been the year. And so maybe in that sense you take some solace because Mookie Betts is only a one-year guy, and there's something to changing the standards. It would have been really cool to have him in San Diego and maybe start turning that tide. But big picture, I don't think a whole lot changes. And that's where I would suggest Padre fans who have been very unhappy over the past 24 hours on social media, that's where they should put their solace, is that in the big picture, it nothing changes all that much in terms of what their plan is.
So is it you're saying there's hope that we could sign Mookie at the end of next year as a free agent? Maybe that's more of our style.
I mean, there's hope. I'll give you that, but it's not a whole lot of hope. He's gonna command an awful lot of money, and the Padres have guys where if they were to commit that money to Mookie Betts, then they probably don't have that money to commit to in-house options.
Yeah,
like Fernando Tatis, Chris Paddock. Who knows how good Mackenzie Gore is going to be. And so I think that's unlikely. I just also think that if Mookie Betts were to come to San Diego and spend 1 year in San Diego, I don't know how much of a hometown discount he's going to take. And so you're
right.
By missing out on Mookie Betts right now, you lose the you lose a season of him. And
that's right.
There's not
that's
that much
totally.
That's different at this point next season or when you go into free agency next season.
So walk us through this. Like, so this Mookie Betts talks ramped up about 10 days ago, I'd say, or maybe almost 2 weeks ago. I mean, it kind of been tossed around. But so one of the things that people were talking about was that the Red Sox are staring down this suspension or this penalty that they're going to face for possibly cheating in the 2018 World Series. Do you think that played a part in the Padres sniffing around and getting back involved? Or were you hearing stuff like that?
I wasn't really hearing it from that perspective. I mean, you hear all the talk about why the Red Sox want to do it, and it makes sense if that's their goal. I still have a hard time wrapping my brain around the Red Sox being the kind of team that – I mean, they won the World Series 2 years ago, and if you keep Mookie Betts and David Price, who are good – even David Price is a good pitcher. He's not he's not worth the money he's being paid, but he's still a good pitcher.
He's overvalued,
keep those two guys.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably two better teams in that division, but baseball can be weird and they can go out and win. And so the Red Sox perspective obviously is if they trade those two guys, they get under the collective bargaining tax threshold, they can reset, they can push forward in 2021 and beyond. And I understand all that. It's not something that would sit well with me as a fan of Boston, but I understand where they're coming from. And so that's why the Padres have had discussions with other teams about a bunch of different hitters. A couple of guys who are like Francisco Lindor, those trade talks were real, but I don't think there was ever that was never a close thing. It never came close to happening because their asking price, the demand was just so high for a guy who had 2 years left and the Indians have all the control over him. And the Indians are trying to win, even though it looks like the Twins have kind of taken over in that division now.
Right.
But what I would say is the reason the trade talks picked up is because the Red Sox had 1 year of Mookie Betts. And so if that's the tack they're going to take, then they have to trade him. And so they don't have the leverage that all these other teams the Padres have been talking with had in those talks. And so that's why the Padres deal kind of started to gain some legs and why the two teams talked. And there was momentum a couple times. And there were a few – I mean, I basically spent the last 2 weeks waking up in the middle of the night, checking my phone, hoping I didn't miss anything. And it's because the talks were real. And essentially there were two different strategies laid out by the Red Sox. One of them was go out, we shed a little bit of salary, and we take this Padres package of prospects and young guys, which is way better than what the Dodgers are offering us. And the other one is you get what the Dodgers are offering and you get instantly under the luxury tax and they take on David Price. And now you've reset, but maybe you haven't bolstered the farm system like you could have in a trade with the Padres.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what I was hearing was that people thought that the Red Sox are just going to get killed with this penalty and that the Padres had all these prospects to help them ease through that if they're going to lose draft picks and stuff. But that might have just been a reason to – I don't know how that played out.
Yeah, they know more than we – the Red Sox have a better idea what's coming than we do. And and I think externally, when you see what the Red Sox are trying to do, maybe trading with the Padres would have made more sense in terms of rebooting and trying to get better faster or at least replenish the system faster. But, I mean, we'll see what they do in the future. When a lot of people want to knock the ownership, and I think this is a fair time to knock Red Sox ownership because there's really no reason for a franchise like that to want to get rid of the money. But the Red Sox have won four titles in the last 14 years, so I think there is some leeway given, and especially when you can kind of consider the fact that the titles they've won, each of them has had a reboot leading up to it.
Right.
So I think in that sense,
they said, we've proven this before, right?
Yeah. After 13, they finished last place after that and they rebooted won. And so maybe it happens again. I think Chaim Bloom's a smart guy and I it's not the trade that I don't know what the specifics of the Padres trade was, but I think there probably would have been some value in going out and getting some prospects and having that as your foundation, especially if one of them's Luis Camposano, who's probably going to be pretty good.
Well, it sounds
like. Do you think that was the price point, or was it Patino, or would you even know that?
Yeah, well, I assume if the Padres had offered like one of those guys, I'm pretty sure Patino, Abrams, Gore were off limits.
Okay.
And if the Padres had offered one of those guys, maybe the Red Sox change where they're going.
Yeah.
But I think it's. That was the cutoff. Camposano, Taylor Trammell, that level of guys are still really, really good.
And you have the Red Sox who are trying to get under the tax. they're trying to get off of Price, and the Padres are like trying to get them to take Myers, which
made it hard.
Yeah,
that's what I was trying to bring up. It's like Myers sounds like the toxic. I mean, if that's the right thing, the one thing that made you had to give an elite prospect to get Myers in that deal, right? Is that was he the linchpin in all this, really?
Probably, because the Padres aren't just taking on $27 million of Mookie Betts deal just like, I mean, they may have had the trade just fallen in their lap, but for the trade to happen the way it did, I would have to think that the amount of money they're paying Will Myers is probably not what Will Myers is worth, at least how he's performed the last three seasons. And so,
and if they're trying to get under, they don't want to take on that money for.
Yeah, and so the question is, how much of Will Myers' contract, which has spread over 3 years, do the Padres eat? And if there's a significant gap between the two sides, then I don't know that there's any reconciling that. Obviously, there wasn't. Maybe there could have been reconciling that if you throw in Luis Patino, but the Padres don't want to jeopardize their future beyond this season just for 2020 of Mookie Betts.
Mookie Betts, yeah.
So you're going to spring training soon, and you're going to see Will Myers. What?
Yes.
How do you talk? I mean, how do you think he's going to approach the season? He's been going into these spring trainings the last few years, basically knowing that the team isn't exactly happy with his contract. I mean, how do you talk to somebody in that position?
This is the.
He's probably used to it, I guess.
I was going to say, it's probably harder for some other guys who are mentioned in trade rumors, whereas Will Myers has done it every single year.
This is routine.
The first time I see him in spring training, I'm like, hey, Will, you want to talk about those trade rumors or whatever? And he's done it every single offseason and every single trade deadline, basically, for the last 2.5 years. And so it's really not that difficult. Plus, he's a pretty personable.
Chill guy.
Do you think there will be a conscious effort by the team to rehabilitate his image
as long as he's on the team, there has to be.
I mean, there has to be.
There has to be. And like, he's still Will Myers, and he can still do some things that, for all the positives about the other four outfield candidates, not including Tommy Pham, for all the positives about the other guys, Will Myers has actually done it, and those guys haven't done it. And so, I think the way you rehabilitate your kind of image or your standing with the team is you go out there and you kick some butt and you perform. And
yeah, that solves problems.
he's done it in the past, but I think at this point we kind of know what he is. He's a guy who's going to put together that 2-week stretch where you're like, dang, this guy's pretty good. And then he's probably going to go into a 3-week slump right after that. And maybe if you put him into a situation this season where it's a little more of a platoon and he's not playing every single day and he's facing lefties all the time, and I don't know how it's going to play out, but they have a bunch of lefty hitting outfielders, maybe that's the right spot for him. It's not a right spot for a guy who's making $20 million this year, but it might be ultimately, like, if you have this roster of 25 guys, how do we get the most out of them? That might be the best spot for Will Myers.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you think it's like the outfield shaping up basically with Pham in left field, and the idea is basically try to get him to play right field? Is that where they're leaning, you would say?
Myers?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I would assume. They haven't explicitly said we're putting Tommy Pham in left field, but they've kind of hinted at it. And so if you assume Pham anchors left field every single day, then it's kind of the way I view it is like a 6-man competition for the other two spots, and Myers and Margot are on the team, but they don't have those everyday jobs. They kind of have to earn them. Mm-hmm. And then Franchi Cordero, Taylor Trammell's off outside looking in. He'd have to do a lot in spring training. But Cordero, Josh Naylor, and Trent Grisham, those three guys fighting for two spots. And then if you have five outfielders, maybe you platoon the other four if Will Myers isn't hitting against righties. And so they would. I think maybe on the surface you want Will Myers. If Will Myers is 2016 first half Will Myers, then he's playing right field every day. But if he's not 2016 first half Will Myers, if he's last season's version, maybe he's playing against left-handed pitching and then some right-handers or pinch hitting late in the game, which is a useful guy to have.
Yeah. Have you heard anything about, I mean, people are talking about this, but have you heard anything about the idea of a platoon with him and Hosmer at first base?
I haven't heard anything explicitly, and everyone obviously
thinks that's happening.
Well, everyone backs Eric Hosmer publicly within the organization, but I had a couple conversations last season about this thing, and the answer was basically, he's still our everyday first baseman. If we get to next if we get to next season and we're trying to compete on an everyday basis and his numbers against lefties aren't any better, well, then you need – then something – you can't have a guy who has a 587 OPS facing lefties every day when you're in a playoff race. And so maybe you don't platoon it strictly. Maybe he plays against certain lefties, whatever kind of pitches he hits. But I think there would if this is the version of Eric Hosmer that you've gotten the last 2 years, if that's what he is again in 2020, and there's reason to believe that he will be, then there's benefit to figuring out which of your lefty hitting outfielders can hit lefties, maybe playing one of them, moving Myers to first and platooning. Or maybe it's Ty France who can hit lefties and he plays first base some of the time. And so no one's said these things explicitly, but there is definitely an undercurrent of if Eric Hosmer has a 580 OPS against lefties, we're not going to play. We can't play Eric Hosmer against lefties in that spot.
Yeah.
That was a good tweet, by the way.
What?
Did you have the tweet about them?
Yeah, I tweeted about it.
Ending
well, no,
each
I mean,
other?
People have been good. Talking about it because of their splits and that you could have a $40 million platoon possibly.
Platoon at first, yeah.
It'd be a good platoon. Hosmer's good against righties. Will Myers good against lefties.
With the outfield, there's so many outfielders. I really wonder about Josh Naylor.
Yeah.
Like, how is he going to – he's not a natural outfielder, and they're just going to basically run him out there. I mean, could they end up trading him before the end of the spring training? Or
I think he's definitely a trade piece.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think he was one of the trade pieces in this Boston deal. But that being said, they still really like Josh Naylor, and I think there's a lot of reason to. I think his bat's really good, and – I don't know that, and maybe I'm wrong. A lot of people wrote him off after his struggles last season, and he did struggle a little bit to adjust to big league pitching, especially the slug didn't show up like it maybe should have. And I don't think his eye was as good as it was in the minors, but I think he was 22 last year. That's a 22-year-old rookie. Those guys figure it out all the time. And a lot of guys aren't even in the big leagues at that point. So
right.
I don't want to say faith that Josh Naylor is going to be an everyday outfielder, but if you have that piece, you don't give him up for nothing because he might turn into something. And if you have that piece and Taylor Trammell and Trent Grisham, like there's talent there, and a couple of those guys have to work out.
Yeah, and usually there will be injuries. It's going to probably work it out. Work itself
I assume
out.
It will. Yeah. Every year this is
yeah.
This is how we go into spring training, ask all these questions. And
he can also join the platoon at first. I mean, really. I did see him play first at the Futures game back in the day.
That's what he's supposed to play.
And that's,
right?
that's his spot in the – baseball world, supposedly, but
yeah, he's not a very good defensive first baseman though.
Either
that I've heard.
Mm. Yeah, well, we're Hosmer last year wasn't showing us much, so I think my bar for defensive first is pretty low right now. But yeah, you're right.
Well, I mean, at catcher, do you think it's going to be more of the same? Are we going to basically have Austin and Mejia developing, you know, at the same time? And
I assume so.
It seems like it's a problem for the fan base, but really not a big problem for the organization.
That's a good way of putting it. Everyone gets mad on Twitter about who's starting and who's worth what value, and I think the Padres are okay having two guys. One of the issues I think is and Austin's a pretty stand-up guy, but he wants to play every day. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of people kind of knock him when he says that. I don't think
no worries.
Excuse me. Edit that out. I don't think that's necessarily the worst thing in the world. I think he that's what you want out of a professional athlete.
Yeah, he wants to play.
Who thinks he's good enough to play. And like, if you look at his numbers, he probably shouldn't be playing every day, but he is really good defensively, and it's worth something to have two catchers in 2020.
Yeah.
So I think maybe there's some questions as to, like, what's the split? Should it be 60-40? How do you split them with certain pitchers? How exactly do you do it? But everyone gets mad on Twitter about Francisco Mejia not starting 150 games. I don't think the Padres don't want Francisco Mejia starting 150 games. And if Austin Hedges is the guy starting 60 or 70 of them, that's probably pretty good for your pitching staff, and he's going to earn you some strikes with the way he defends and frames.
And also, like, how many catchers in Major League Baseball are playing 150 games around the league?
There's like no one. I think I looked it up, and I don't know what it was last season, but two seasons ago, there was only one catcher that even caught three-quarters of the innings of his team. And it was Wilson Contreras, who was, like, just over the threshold. So, like, no one's even playing 75% of innings anymore. It's, for the most part, it's like two-thirds is the highest, or it's pretty much the standard, is two-thirds for one guy, a third for whoever the backup is.
Yeah, so it's like the running back in football now. It's a platoon position.
Yeah, right? I've actually had that exact comparison made to me.
Yeah.
And that's not to say, like, the difference I think with the running backs is that, like, running backs aren't as valuable as they used to be, or at least we've come to realize that they're not all that valuable. But catchers still are really valuable.
Yeah, that.
You just don't want to max them out, especially if, like, if you're a playoff team, you don't want to max out your catcher in May and June and July when you need him. Like, it's the most excruciating
physically
demanding position.
Yeah, you get beat up at that position.
You need him being
healthy
in October.
Yeah.
With a situation like this, though, where Austin is so much better defensively, and Danny on the 5.5 podcast brought this up, that there could be a residual just kind of problem with younger pitchers having a better defensive catcher and like blaming their problems on having to use like Mejia, you know, having that disparity in defense. Have you ever noticed that, or in a clubhouse where guys favor one catcher and blame their bad performances on another catcher?
Anything? Yeah, I haven't noticed that. No one says that to me because I think they're all smart enough to realize that if they said that to me, it would become
a
story.
That seems like something that could be possible.
But, yeah, no, I think it's definitely possible, and I think it's definitely a thing. And I think, like, just imagine anything you do in life.
Yeah.
Like, whoever your kind of teammate or your work partner. Like, I have different editors who edit my stuff every night. When I get a good editor, I get, like, that makes me happy. It's someone who's easy to work with.
I'll name the good editors.
No, that's great. Yeah. I think that's possible.
Like, I have to imagine it's the same thing with a pitcher, but also they're professional athletes and it's their job to overcome that. And if they're going to whine and complain about it and not take responsibility for themselves. Like, do you remember that Dodger game last season? I think Kirby Yates, it looked like he was getting a little frustrated.
Right, yes. Right.
I think he was clearly getting frustrated with the catcher on the mound. Yeah. But then after the game, we talked to Kirby, and that's as kind of frustrated as I've seen him. He's usually a pretty even-keel guy. He takes all the responsibility on himself. And so if he's not on the same page with Francisco Mejia, that's one thing. If he's going to blame the catcher for his failures when they were his failures, they were Kirby Yates is the one who made the pitches, then that's not what you want out of your closer, out of your kind of leader in the bullpen, and he's – Kirby's probably the right guy for the rest of the guys on the staff to look up to for that exact reason. I think so, yeah. I think it's probably a thing, but with the right coaching and probably the right veterans, the young guys should learn, look, it's not about you and your numbers being helped every night. It's a collective effort to win more baseball games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the pitching staff is interesting this year. It seems like they spent a lot of money on the bullpen. Is that a reflection of them just having a younger staff coming in that they wanted to put money there? Do you think?
I think it's a product of that, plus a product of the way the free agent market was shaping up. They didn't want to spend the big money on like a Bumgarner or Ryu who are pretty clearly, I think, on the decline, but still good, on the decline. So you're going to get your best seasons with those guys up front, when the Padres' trajectory might be going in a different direction. And now imagine Bumgarner's your fifth or sixth best pitcher and you're paying him all that money, and now there's no room for Luis Patino at the back of the rotation when he's ready. So I think what they did was they still think they can win now with this model because they've built a bullpen that I think is pretty good. And bullpens are weird, and we'll get into the season. I'm sure someone will get hurt and someone won't perform up to what they're supposed to be performing to, and bullpens never work the way you think they should work, but on paper, it might be the best bullpen in the National League. And so it's not only a good bullpen, but it's a deep bullpen to the point where if Joey Lucchese is your number five starter and Zach Davies is your number four starter, and they're pretty good, but maybe you don't want them going through the rotation a third time, well, you can say, hey, Matt Strom, go eat up two and a third and kind of save those arms, and they don't have to face a guy for a third time and have a higher chance of failure in that spot. And they've built a bullpen where they have those guys, and I bring back Craig Stammen, that's useful because now you have, like, Craig Stammen when he was the second best pitcher in the bullpen for a time last year, that's not what you want. Craig Stammen when he's maybe the fifth or sixth best pitcher in the bullpen and can eat those middle frames, that's probably closer to what you want. So I think they built that bullpen to protect the staff. And then maybe later in the season, you see a Mackenzie Gore, Luis Patino come through.
Yeah, so we kind of know that it'll be Lucchese, Davies, and Paddock, and possibly Gore, you know, but what do you think they're going to do? I'm curious more about like what's their plan for Marajon and Quantrill this season and Baez. They'd put them in the same group. Like, are they going to use them in long relief more or try them out in spots as starters for like low inning starters?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question because some of it could depend on the health of what the guys in the rotation are now. I think they want all three of them. They still think can be starters and probably have the most value as starters. So they're going to go into camp with all three of them starting games. And then I think maybe as the spring happens, as they kind of see what goes on, like if Mackenzie Gore becomes Chris Paddock and you just can't leave him off the team because he's too good, now there's one fewer rotation spot. Maybe you start to say, you know what, Michelle Baez, like you could be a good starter, but you're pretty nasty in relief too, and that's time to officially maybe declare him a bullpen piece. And that's it's not the end of the world if that's what you have to do with. I mean, I think with Baez and Morejon especially, they're young, and if you develop them a little farther at AAA, they could become pretty good starters. Quantrill, I think, is more he's already proven he can do starting in long man, and doesn't really matter what role he's pitching in. And so he's kind of already there. But if that's what Baez and Morejon become, given the stuff that they have, which is pretty good and pretty promising, that's a useful piece on a team that presumably will have Paddock and Gore and Patino at the front of the rotation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, is your prediction for opening day starter? Do you have one?
I have Chris Paddock as my opening day starter.
That's probably a pretty good bet right at this point, huh?
Yeah.
I would have guessed it would have been someone who wasn't on the roster before the offseason, but then they really just didn't
do anything on that, yeah.
Could have been David
Agreed.
Price.
Agreed with that also.
Well, before we get you out of here, AJ, you wrote a profile of an old Padres pitcher about 2 weeks ago, I think, Donnie Elliott. That was really fascinating. He was basically a guy who was making his way through the majors and kind of came in through the fire sale actually, and taught Trevor Hoffman how to throw his legendary curveball, one of the great pitches of all time.
Yeah,
what was it like talking to him? I mean,
it was really cool, and it was interesting because basically what my company did was they said, hey, pick a guy who's not very known in your franchise's history but who like had a big impact, and so I sat down and did some thinking for a long time, and I settled on him. And it was interesting talking to him because you kind of got this sense that like he really, really missed pitching, and he really, really loved pitching. And now he's a high school pitching coach teaching changeups in Texas, and he's doing what he loves there. And here's a guy who basically spent his entire life focused on pitching. He loved it growing up. He loved pitching in the major leagues. He loved pitching in the minor leagues. He loved pitching even in independent ball when that was tough after he sustained a couple injuries and his career ended after a year and a half. But he basically put 3 decades of his life into baseball, and he's just known for this conversation he had with Trevor Hoffman telling him to pinch his 2 fingers together when he threw his changeup. And that was just fascinating that's what he's known for. But he kind of comes to grips with that. He kind of says, you know what, like, I wish I had a 12-year career and was in the World Series and pitching big games and known for my great numbers, but that's pretty cool too. And it earned him, like, he went to Cooperstown with Trevor, and he was here when they retired his number. And so it earned him like a little niche part in Padres history. And he was fun to talk to about.
Yeah. Cool story.
Yeah, it's crazy. I didn't realize that, like, he was talking about the changeup and how there's so many different ways you can throw a changeup opposed to other pitches.
Yeah.
And so that was fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really, really good. He said something, I don't remember what the exact quote was, but it was, there's one way to throw a fastball, a couple different ways to throw a curveball, and 1,000 different ways to throw a changeup. And so I asked him, like, do you teach that Trevor Hoffman changeup to any of your high school kids? And he was like, no, not really, because you kind of have to be Trevor Hoffman to do that changeup.
That's Trevor Hoffman's way of
doing it. But Trevor's this prospect, essentially, I guess they were up at the time. But
he was up, but he was trying to hang on. He was like, you didn't know what Trevor Hoffman was going to become.
He's very he's a few years from transitioning from shortstop, right?
And yeah, so that would have only been 2 or 3 years after. And his fastball was really good, and then he had a shoulder injury, and it wasn't as good, and so he was looking for that second pitch and just had that conversation one day. And the funny thing is, I couldn't get either of them to agree on, or to, they didn't talk to each other, but no one knew exactly when it happened because it was such a – it was just a normal conversation that they had. They just happened to have this conversation in the outfield at Jack Murphy Stadium, and that was that. So I think that was kind of really fascinating to me because it was just that normal of a moment that spurred this Hall of Fame career for Trevor Hoffman.
Well, it's an icon. I mean, it's one of the great pitches of the 90s, like Trevor Hoffman's changeup, or I guess the odds too. But you know, it made me wonder if there was a guy who just turned Mariano Rivera onto his cutter. Or
I think
something
there
like
is.
That. There probably is. There's guys like this all over sports.
I think the story about Mariano was his bullpen coach. Is the one that was like, hey, what was that? What did you just throw? And he's like, well, I just did this. He's like, do that again.
That's insane. Yeah, well, you can read about that on AJ's timeline. It's in your archives.
Yeah, it's relatively recent.
Yeah.
I haven't tweeted a whole lot in the last couple weeks.
You're being a healthy person. That's great. Just kidding.
Well, I got to get back into it in spring training.
So you're going out there and getting ready? And
yep, Monday.
Wow. It's happening.
I'm so excited. I need it bad.
Are you guys going out?
Bad.
I'm going to try to get out there. I haven't decided.
I have a couple business trips, so it's going to be hard to convince my wife, but yes.
My fantasy baseball draft's in March, so it's in LA this year. So I don't know if I can make it all work, but
we want to.
Yeah. Well, hey, AJ, thanks for coming on. You can follow AJ on Twitter at AJ Cassavell. Is that basically
that? Is correct. Yeah.
Cool. And last time we had you on, we were talking about whether or not they could get Manny Machado. They did. So I guess we're not getting Francisco Lindor. I don't know.
Probably not.
Probably not. I don't know. Somebody's writing about it, I guess.
But. Yeah. Something by the midsummer if it doesn't go right, right? Is that the deal?
Yeah, and maybe things change. Maybe the price tag comes down if the Indians aren't competitive, and maybe that's where the Padres go. I also think if the Padres are in contention in July, they'll have all sorts of pieces they can trade. And I wrote about this today, and this will be the last thing I kind of say because I know a lot of fans are bummed about the Mookie deal. But it may be the end of it hasn't been written yet. And if in 5 years Luis Camposano's the everyday catcher and the Padres don't have a definitive everyday answer that we're there right now, if he's the guy behind the plate, and I don't know what the other pieces would have been, but maybe if Josh Naylor's slugging and he's a regular, maybe you look back on this and kind of say, hey, it's a good thing the Padres didn't get 1 year of Mookie Betts, because the pieces that they would have given up were better for the long term. And so ultimately the Padres didn't. It stings now, and it should sting because Mookie Betts is really good, and it would have been really fun for Padre fans to get to watch him every day. But like I said earlier, we're sitting here next year. I assume I'll come on at around the same time.
Yeah, please. Yes.
We can make this
this
annual
time
tradition.
Of year
post,
for you. Yeah.
Yeah, post-Super Bowl, just before I go to
Once you guys
training.
Get started in the season, it's like
And so if the Dodgers haven't won the World Series, and if the Padres, maybe say the Padres win 85, 86 games and really show signs of progress, and those young pitchers come along and they look like they're going to be the future, and maybe the Dodgers are a little worse off because they had to give up stuff for Mookie Betts, and the Padres are a little better off because they didn't have to give up
slide right
stuff
in
for
there.
Mookie Betts.
All right.
Love it.
Mark that. We'll isolate this clip last time. We can talk about it next time. But all right, man. Thanks for coming on. We're going to call Dallas because it does still sting, and we're gonna get real upset about it with him. So, all right. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Bye.
Marte.
Yeah, we're on the line with Dallas McLaughlin. We just talked to AJ Cassavell, and now we got some info from him, but now we just want to get real.
Yeah, he didn't want to cry too much. He wasn't as emotional as I am right now. So.
Yeah. So how are you feeling? How are you feeling post Betts week?
Well, remember how we. When we were looking for a manager, and they kept floating around all this stuff. And then you heard the name Jace Tingler. And then you were like, oh, that's our manager, Jace Tingler. Like, we're not going to get anybody else but Jace Tingler.
I do remember that feeling, yes.
Yeah, as soon as I heard the word Dodgers, I knew we weren't getting Mookie Betts. It just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, and it's that Padres feeling where you know immediately, as soon as you hear anything that you don't like, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. It's like that moment.
Anyway, I'm feeling great.
That moment you get a report card that's just full of C's. You know what I mean?
Yes.
We are never going to win this division ever again. That's what I know. I know that.
Well,
it feels insurmountable, doesn't
it? It's not
it?
Even about bets. It's about, look at this goddamn roster they have. I don't know what we're ever going to do. And they're smarter than us. They're just smarter than us.
Well, the one thing that we have to have – that we have to try to rely on is that Dave Roberts is a pretty subpar manager.
Thank you.
I needed to hear that.
It's true. It's true. Like, the reason why, I mean, the sign stealing aside, the reason why that guy loses World Series is because he overmanages his bullpen and his starting pitching, and everybody knows it. And he's like a worse version of Bud Black. He just can't stop tinkering.
Yes. This is true.
When you have a lineup that talented, just let him play and shut up about it. You know what I mean? He has no – like, I remember last World Series he lost, everybody was like, how is he not fired? Like, how is the guy not fired? Because it is clearly his fault every time.
Well, obviously their strategy is just, like, whatever Dave is going to do with the pitching staff and making changes within the game, we're going to have an offense to compensate.
I mean,
like, there's nothing our pitchers can do that will ever put us out of offensively getting back in the game. So as long as there's a line, like,
well, they
put that lineup out there, who cares about the pitching?
I think last year they just ran into the Nationals, who just had three good pitchers and they cut right through them. But you know,
right.
That can happen to anybody. Yeah.
But also, I think anybody who's listening to this is going to be very mad when I say this, but I think it's true. Position for position, I think the Nationals just had a better team. Like, I know the lineup of the Dodgers is more daunting because of basically Cody Bellinger, but once you get past Cody Bellinger, who else on the Dodgers are you, like, unbelievably frightened of at bat? You know what I mean? Like, Max Muncy is always pretty clutch. Justin Turner is fine. You know, he's good, but Corey Seager didn't have a great season. Like, I just... You know what I mean? Like, Cody Bellinger is a beast, and I think will be for a long time. And now he's got Mookie Betts by his side. And the problem with the Betts thing for the Dodgers is the Dodgers can just totally sign him now. You know what I mean? Like, they have no money committed anywhere, basically. And they can just sign him.
Yeah. Keep your apartment, sign a 10-year lease. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, but that's the thing with the Nationals. I think the Nationals are just a better team, like, all around, and nobody really wanted to admit that because everybody just goes, oh my God, the Dodgers are so good, which they are. They are. I just think that the Nationals had a better squad. But, like, here's the deal, and we've talked about this before, if not on the podcast, definitely in real life. Like, the greatest trick the Padres ever pulled is making us believe that we're in on everybody.
It's, like, pretty amazing.
I don't know how we keep getting duped into this.
I'm trying to figure out if it's my own obsession problem or if it's an advent of technology. Like, if I'm tracking this on Twitter too much, is it more my fault and technology merging together and creating this problem? Because, I mean, I, when we were kids, that we couldn't do this.
Yeah,
it was like
maybe
wait,
an article a day.
Yeah, or like somebody would do a radio hit, or right. Maybe you'd see a you know, Channel 8, Ted Light, or whoever, you know, somebody on the TV
rant
would talk about
yeah.
it. But now yeah. you have this thing in your pocket that allows you to believe in things.
Or you carry yours in your pocket. I literally just tape mine around my face.
I mean, that's kind of where it's going.
That's
so
how
this,
it's been with
a
Mookie.
This is a different. The major league offseason is becoming this completely other thing that it was. I mean, it wasn't like this 5 years ago, was it?
Well, it's becoming, I mean, here's the thing. Like, you're totally right. It is, you know, obviously it's technology, but the fact that the team has embraced this form of rumors to a point where it doesn't matter who it is. Like we suddenly are in on them somehow. Like, I don't know how they've adjusted the algorithm to make their name show up in every single person. Like, we're in on Marte, we are in on Pham, we're in on Mookie, we're in on Kershaw, we're in on Bumgarner. Like, we're in on anybody that's available this offseason. We have been mentioned in conjunction with
Tom Brady. And
like, I think there's a benefit.
Yeah,
it's
Tom
calculated.
Brady is going to be a Padre.
There's a benefit for them because it allows, if they're in on everything, it does feel, it's fake, but it feels like they're being proactive and they're being aggressive. They're trying
sure.
to win.
And they're doing, you know, their due diligence
we always
everything.
Joke about it now. Like, you know, there's somebody on Twitter right now, or there's going to be, who's going to say, or there's probably, this is more like Padres Facebook probably, but it's like, I just love that this organization was in on bets. Or that we have an organization. We have been blessed with an organization that is in on these guys. And then they don't get them, but they have this whole 2 weeks where everybody's obsessing over their product and saying, man, these guys are animals. They're just going after everybody. I feel competitive with my team, and we're going after a title together. Oh, we didn't get him. Oh, well. I think there's something that is beneficial for them. I don't know.
Of course it's beneficial. I mean, of course it's beneficial for them to pretend like we're in on everybody. And, of course, like the Mookie thing was, of course, farther along than the other rumors. You know what I mean? Like this – if it wasn't, you would have had Red Sox brass coming out and, you know, rebuffing a bunch of this stuff. But so, I mean, of course they were talking and had been on and off talking and everything. I just think that it's like, with the exception of Machado, which was now seemingly such a fluke, what's going to happen? Like, I just don't understand what happens with this team. Like, I like Pham more and more. I think it's going to be a very interesting season with him. I've always liked Profar, as I've said on the podcast before. And I think actually he would probably be, like, Petco might be a really great stadium for him to play in. However, I'm tired of being disappointed. I'm tired. Like, just let it go. Like, because all this Mookie thing did, really, in reality, all it did was it did two things. And I was going to write about this, and I might still. But all it did was two things. One, it disappointed fans that we didn't get Mookie Betts. And it disappointed fans that we still had Will Myers. Mm-hmm.
And it scared fans that the Dodgers are better.
Well, then ultimately, everybody's pissed off because the Dodgers now are the favorites once again, and more so. And then also, like, think about what this just did to Will Myers, like a guy who obviously has trouble getting pumped up to
confidence.
Play baseball.
Yeah,
like he has confidence issues. So all you did for the last month was drag him through the mud and make it very obvious that you gave him way too much money, that you screwed up signing the guy, and no one will take him from you. Like, even trying to split his salary, you can't get him off your roster. So now you have a pissed off Will Myers, who, if I was him, I'd be pissed off. I mean, come on. I know it's baseball, but this is a different sort. Like, with the technology we're in now, this is definitely a different sort of baseball, where, like you said, in the 90s, maybe we'd have a couple news stories written about it, you know, a couple of things in the paper written about it. But now this guy's name's been dragged through the mud for a month, and now he's got to go be like, yeah, I'm stoked to be a Padre. Like, no, he's not. And nobody and none of the fans are stoked to have him. And that's a bummer for everybody. So that's all we ended up doing with this, you know, last month of the Mookie Betts drama, was piss off fans that we don't have Mookie Betts, piss them off that we still have Myers, and then piss off Will Myers. It's like, what a bummer. Like, the more and more, and I tweeted this, the more this every offseason happens, I literally think to myself, I just don't think Preller is a good GM for Major League Baseball. I think he's great at minor league talent. I think he's great at international talent. I think he can really build a farm system, as he's proven he can do. But major league level talent, I just don't see it.
Well, I think he could be, I think, I think there's it's fair to start thinking that way because, you know, he has these spots all over the roster that just don't make a lot of sense. But, you know, I think of him, he might be somebody like a Norv Turner in football or Wade Phillips in football, where they're so good at one side of the game, and then the natural progression is to just give them a promotion, yeah. And it's just a different skill set. Like Wade Phillips in football makes every defense he touches better, but you put him in as a head coach, and he's not a head coach. Norv Turner's basically the same way. I mean, he's like this offensive mind, and then he becomes
sit up in the booth and call plays. Yeah,
yeah, and then he becomes a head coach and destroys my early to mid 30s. You know, like, but. But, like, could you see that? This guy could just be an exceptional scout, and his natural state of being should be finding the next guy in Curaçao under a rock saying, like, oh, this is the next, you know, great player. You know, like, going all over the world, bending rules, you know. you come back, and the team has subtly talked about this, where they want, you know, they're focusing on, they want A.J. Preller to be around more. Like he's going to be more hands-on with the major league club. And it's like,
well,
all right. Yeah. Well maybe that,
what's going on?
I don't know. Yeah. I think not his natural, like what he's built for. I don't know.
And listen, you know, here's the thing, like Preller gave us that one amazing offseason where we got everybody. But I mean, also as soon as that happened, every expert came out and was like, this is a terrible lineup. Like, this looks cool and this feels cool.
If you're 12 years old, this is awesome.
This team will not succeed. And they were right. And what he did is he gutted the farm system. I maintain, and I still maintain, that I think one of the reasons he did that was so he could rebuild the farm system as he liked it. Which he did do, and then what happened? We're like the top two farm system for the last three seasons, you know? So, like, obviously he knew what he was doing to some degree. However, again, that didn't translate to any sort of success on the major league level. And this whole year of, like, our window of competitiveness keeps getting pushed out back because the players he's acquired keep not panning out. I mean, Joey Lucchese, sorry, I know people out there, he didn't acquire Joey Lucchese. Sure, I don't know, and I don't care to look it up. But, like, there's dudes who like him, you know what I mean? Like, he didn't really pan out. Manny Margot has not really panned out. You know, like, he's maybe a fourth outfielder. Like, Hunter Renfroe was fine. We'll see how he does in another ballpark. Like, it's just, like, nobody he's – like, there's nobody that I can point to that was like, that's a Preller guy, and that – besides Tatis, which is, like, a luck of the draw. I mean, nobody saw this. Like, people keep saying, like, oh, we fleeced him in that Shields deal. Nobody saw this. Like, that Shields deal was a salary dump.
I know that the thing that people think about it is we dumped him, but we also ate $40 million. Tatis isn't some free thing that we got out of nowhere. Like,
yeah. And
he's $40 million. You know, we paid most of James Shields while he was on the White Sox. So it's
exactly. And, it's not and like Tatis was like, he was a lucky pick that there's a lot of talent there and we could see it happening, but by no means did anybody go, oh, Tatis is going to be what he is. And so, I mean, I'm willing to give Preller all the credit on that deal because he made it and it worked out, and that's how baseball is. But past that, it's like, I just don't see what he's done that has made me go, oh yeah, I trust Preller. Like, I trust him to build a farm system, but none of those players besides Tatis have panned out. I mean, Urias was a nightmare, show me a pitcher. Paddock is fine. Hopefully he can figure out a third pitch. And
I guess Paddock would be the one where you'd say, well, he didn't.
Yeah, I mean, Tatis and Paddock. And there's a couple dudes. But it's like Patino and Gore. Like, I want them to pan out. I want all of this to pan out. Everybody does. But it's like, I just don't have any confidence. And I like Preller. And I want him to succeed. Who doesn't that's a Padre fan? But just, I need some results after, what, six seasons now. I need something.
Well, it sounds like the idea is if they are competitive up until the trade deadline, which that'd be fun. I don't know if that – is that something we do? Because I don't know.
Well, if they're competitive, this team performs the way that everyone could. Yes, we could.
They're around 500. They're sniffing a wild card, possibly. Would they make a move with some of these prospects? And who would those prospects be? That's what we're staring down. What I'm afraid of is that we're staring down the barrel of another season where we're doing this podcast and it's August and
there's nothing to talk about.
I mean, it's you know, shutting Tatis down again or something like that. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. I honestly, that's what I think is going to happen. I'm going to go to the ballpark and I'm going to watch Tatis and Machado and Paddock. And if Patino comes up, I'll certainly go check him out. Like, I'm excited about watching the guys. Like, I really am. I mean, you know, that's the difference between this team the last 2 years and the teams before it, is that there's players that I still want to go see, you know what I mean? That I'm still excited to watch play. But at the same time, like, I don't have any confidence that we're going to be competitive. Like, there's just nothing to tell me that we will be, especially now that the Dodgers have Mookie. And the Diamondbacks just got Marte. It's like the Diamondbacks, who, by all accounts, why the fuck are they going after anybody? Like, you know what I mean? But they are. They went and got Marte. It's like, why couldn't we pull that off? Like, what? Like, I just.
They have two Martes. I mean, we're.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah, Cattell and Starling. It just doesn't make any sense to me why we can't get these players in deals. I just don't see the disconnect. And I know everybody's fired up about the farm system. It's great. I just hope it pans out. But it's like, how many times have you seen a baseball team that has been, you know, 80% farm system win a World Series? The Royals, when the Royals did it, the Astros, and then name me another one.
Well,
like, nobody can.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, on that note, yeah, I don't know. Well,
and I'm just so bummed too with Mookie going to the Dodgers, because it feels like we were climbing up this hill. You know what I mean? And there was like light beaming over the top of the crest of the mountain, and we were getting to the top. We had Machado. Our farm system was, you know, starting to make its way into the majors, and Betts to me seemed like a financial possibility for the Padres, knowing what we know. And if we're really going to do this, we can, you know, push over the top and we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, whatever, all the analogies you can go through. And then the Dodgers land Betts, and it's just like we get to the top of Cal's Mountain and realize like Mount Everest is still yet to go. You know, like it's such a, even with Machado and Tatis and everything, it just feels like we're still so far away from,
well,
you know, throwing the ring in the fire of Mordor. It's just like so
daunting.
Without
a player like Mookie, you know, now everybody's like, oh, well, no, that it's fine because your window was, you know, 2021, 2022. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, what?
When did this get pushed back again?
Why does it keep getting pushed back? And it's like, I can't do this for another 5 years. You know, like, they're my team and I'll always love them, but it's just like, can we do something? Like, I was looking at, you know, getting prepped for fantasy baseball, defending champion. And I was looking at some, you know, lists and projections and stuff. And like one of the, you know, Kirby Yates is listed as one of the top three closers in almost everyone's projections. And I'm like, that's amazing. But that's somebody who like didn't come up through our system. Like we got him and we put him on. It's like, you need dudes like that. Like you need to find guys like that. You know what I mean? Like we have a superstar Machado, we have a superstar Tatis, and then we have some youngsters, but it's like you need to go find the pieces like every other team does, like the Astros did, or like the Yankees always did, or the Red Sox did. Like they have their four guys from the farm system, they have their two superstars, and then they go get these guys who just develop quick. You know, they're maybe older, but they develop. You know what I mean? And I don't have any trust in Preller to do that. Like I just don't.
Well,
but anyway, happy Monday.
I know, happy Monday.
To Wednesday, happy Wednesday.
It's, I don't know. Who cares? So
we don't
Dallas,
have bets. Who cares?
Dallas. So you have some shows this weekend, right? Tell
yes,
us about it.
Yes. I would. I'm back headlining the Madhouse Comedy Club downtown Friday and Saturday night, 7:30 and 9:30. two shows a night. If you are listening to this and if you're going to be in downtown San Diego this weekend, go ahead and find me on Twitter at Dallas_MC. Or you can even do it through the Cap Faith. That'll be fine too. But like DM me and hit me up on the list and I'll put you on the list. You know, and your party. It's kind of an open guest list. And the Madhouse is nice. It's where the old Hard Rock used to be downtown.
It's good food. They have good food.
Good food, big menu, good food, you know, good beer. They got $3.94 on tap. And yeah, it'll be fun. So it's this Friday, this Saturday, 7:30, 9:30. Let me know if you want to go. Put you on the list, and it'd be fun to see some Padres Twitter down there.
Yeah, man.
Maybe I'll even do some Padres jokes.
We need to laugh.
We do.
We need to laugh. All right, man. Well, we'll talk to you soon. I don't know what else could change before spring training, but
who knows?
We'll be faith and
keeping the faith. All right, guys.
All right. Well, we're gonna call Elizabeth McCann, my wife, who just lost Mookie Betts. And, you know, we should feel bad for – no, we shouldn't. But,
she's got Verdugo.
Yeah.
She's fine.
Who I always thought looks like a Wahlberg. It kind of looks like a Wahlberg. all right. We're going to call my wife. It's her birthday.
All right.
All right. Thanks. Bye, thanks, Dal. See ya.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
I'm going to tell you a story.
On the line with the American League lady for TKF, my wife, Elizabeth McCann. She's a Boston Red Sox fan who is hurting right now because she just lost one of the great Red Sox of all time, or could have been. I don't know. How do you feel about losing Mookie?
It sucks. It's a bummer. I'm pretty upset about it. I'm mad. I'm mad at the ownership.
Yeah? Why?
Because they didn't have to do this. They have the money, you know. They're the Red Sox, not the Padres. They can afford to keep Mookie Betts.
Yeah, it's pretty insane because you have the Dodgers and the Red Sox, two of the richest organizations in the league, both basically making moves to stay pretty thrifty. And the Padres are just out here in the wind, but enough about us. I mean, so, you know, Mookie Betts, he won a World Series. Did he win the MVP? He won the MVP, correct?
He did, yeah. The year they won the World Series, yeah.
Did you know?
I believe. Sorry if I'm wrong about that.
Did you know the trade was real when the team started filtering out information that he didn't want to stay?
That definitely made me think it was probably going to happen because that's kind of the Red Sox MO. When they usually it's kind of after the person leaves, they kind of get all these hit pieces published in the local papers on the people who left. But yeah, it was, there were all these rumors that he didn't want. Now I read something today that said he did want to stay and he was upset. You never know the truth, but that definitely gave me the feeling that it was a kind of a foregone conclusion.
Well, I was just gonna say we're both sad about the same thing but for different reasons. We both don't have Mookie. Yeah.
I know. I mean, honestly, I was, when it was rumored that he was gonna go to the Padres, for me that was sort of like, well, you know, I'm still a Red Sox fan. I'd rather he was on the Red Sox, but I'll get to see him play live a whole lot more often if he's in San Diego, so that'll be nice. You know, so I was definitely pulling for him. If he had to go anywhere, I wanted it to be the Padres. But, the Dodgers is just kind of like, now.
Yeah, it's now the worst possible place he could have gone, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, unless he went to the Yankees for you, I don't know of a worse place he could have gone.
Well, one thing, I think I've heard you and your family talk about this, and you live out here now, so you're probably not as attuned to this, but I heard that there's a problem with that a lot of Red Sox fans are having with this cutting back on the spending thing with that they're doing is that, you know, the team has bought up a lot of property around Fenway, and mm-hmm. there are some locals that feel like, okay, if you're just going to be making money off of us and kind of owning this whole part of the city, you're making money hand over fist. The whole region is printing money for you, essentially. Like, who cares about a luxury tax?
I don't know how much about like people getting mad specifically about them buying land and things like that. It's frustrating in general when they do. I mean, they own, you know, the six states of New England, and that's six. Numbers aren't my strong suit. They're one of the wealthiest franchises, and it's frustrating when they do these cost-cutting measures, especially, I guess, the reason that I'm mad about this is very specifically because, I mean, I personally think Mookie Betts is like a once-in-a-generation player. I mean, Mike Trout's probably the only guy in the league who's better than him right now. And so it's like, okay, if you're going to cut costs, like, I can see getting rid of David Price. Like, David Price was, you know, probably not worth the money that we spent on him. I mean, we won a World Series with the guy. I'm not going to complain too much, but they gave him an enormous contract for maybe just a slightly above average pitcher, you know, at this point in his career. And so it's like getting rid of a guy like that to cut cost makes sense. You don't want, I don't want to call David Price dead weight, but you don't want someone who's not really earning their money on your roster. But that's, I mean, God, like, I think if you paid him $300 million over the next 10 years, you'd probably earn you back every penny of it. And I just getting rid of him to cut cost just seems so dumb. I just feel like there's so many other people. And they didn't, I mean, you know, time will tell with what they got for him, but these guys they got, it's not like they got like top 10 prospects, you know, they're like decent prospects, but they're not, sound like they're setting the world on fire.
Alex Verdugo could be a really good player. And I think it sounds like for them, the biggest priority was just getting off of Price or getting some money off of Price and getting below that tax so they could be flexible in the years to come. So I don't know, there's conflicting ideas about it, but yeah, it does when you lose the person who was on his way, if not is the face of baseball for a lot of people, and just you've already won, he's already accomplished pretty much everything you can accomplish as a player, and he's still like 26 or 27.
And it's just, I mean, the Red Sox whole kind of game plan is, and it's a lot of people's plan, is to sort of grow the on the field talent, spend your money on pitching. And that seemed to be working pretty well. And I mean, their farm system has produced some amazing stars, including Betts. And it's just like, I just feel like they're kind of almost going back on their own plan here. It's like, wasn't this the plan to like home grow superstars so you have a little more control over them? I don't know. Seems dumb to me, but
all right. Well, you guys let that snake Tom Warner in the house, so this is what happens. He starts reducing and ruining everything, right?
Getting under those luxury taxes. Yeah. Dang it.
There's a lot of different ways to have a fire sale, I guess.
I know.
You guys have a skyscraper.
The Red Sox weren't going to play for any kind of offseason this year, were they? With Betts and
postseason,
Price?
Yeah.
Do they have postseason hopes?
I mean, they always have postseason hopes. You know, things are going to be weird, obviously, with the sudden firing of Cora. Last year was pretty lackluster, and I don't know how many changes they've made to address the problems that led to last year being a problem. Although some of it was just, you know, bad luck with injuries and things like that, which you can't really control. But yeah, I mean they're always trying to be in the hunt, you know. Usually,
Boston doesn't have to do a tanking phase, do they?
Not really. I mean, it's kind of not. You know, the fan base is pretty insatiable, and they get pretty angry when they at things like a tanking phase, a rebuild. You know, those kind of words do not go over well in Boston because we're all like the worst. I know Boston fans are the absolute worst, and we're very entitled, but I feel like part of that comes though because it's like, you know, we're paying some of the highest prices in baseball to go to that park, and you know, people do support the team. Like everywhere you go, there's people wearing Red Sox stuff, and you know, everyone watches the games and all that, and it's just like, for them to then say like, oh, we don't have enough money. It's like, what are you talking about? You don't have enough
yes,
money.
You
know, it's just like, what are you talking about? It's just, yeah, it's frustrating. But
well, we just wanted to
have
you on.
They're doing a good job owning the Premier League team I follow, though. Go Liverpool.
Okay. Well, we wanted to have you on to, you know, vent a little bit. It is your birthday. Happy birthday.
It is.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you
for letting me, a birthday present.
Thanks for letting me do a podcast instead of going to dinner.
I'm having dinner with Nick's parents tonight.
Yeah. I'm married to the wax, baby.
Support our Patreon. Support our Patreon.
Liz, you also have a podcast called the Fictitious Dishes Podcast.
I do. It is called Getting Real.
Getting
with
Real
the
Fictitious
with the Fictitious Dishes.
I should know that. Getting Real with the Fictitious Dishes. It's
after
an advice.
We picked that name, we learned there's a lot of other podcasts that start with Getting Real with XYZ. So you need to type in the full thing, Getting Real with the Fictitious Dishes, to find us. But yeah. And if you're curious to hear what my band sounds like, we're now on Spotify and Apple Music and all the streaming services. So,
all right.
Wonderful.
Check us out.
Check it out. Well, thanks for listening to the Kept Faith podcast, everybody. We'll see you next week when, I don't know, what are we going to, I mean, what else can possibly happen?
Lindor, right?
Lindor. That's, when we get Lindor, when it's Lindor week or Thor week or whatever they're going to string us along with next. So tune in at the Kept Faith at Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and check out our Patreon, patreon.com/thekeptfaith. Help us out. We're always here. So, all right. Thanks. Bye.
Afraid of Cubs. The Padres are.
Ball busters!
Well hit deep right at the fence. It is going in front.
High right center field. Way back there, near. Going. It's gone.
Great play off balance. Throw to first. They got him. The sensational play by Alan Wiggins.
2-0. High fly ball. Well hit right field. Look out. Maldonado at the wall. Terry Kennedy. Home run.
Drive to deep right field. If it's fair, the Padres will have the lead. It is.
The show you just heard was part of the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. To hear other great shows like the Voice of San Diego Podcast, I Made It in San Diego, a show all about the people behind the region's businesses, the award-winning Culture Cast, The Kept Faith, a San Diego sports show, and more, please visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts. If you'd like to sponsor any of the podcasts, please email Aaron at voiceofsandiego.org. That's ERIN at VOSD.org.